You know, one observation I've had about the EU for some time now was the irony of spending so much wealth and effort to get rid of German power in World War II, only to be like, here you go, here's an EU for you to exercise all this wealth and power over the rest of Europe. And then this shit happens, and it's always like, this is like, you're exercising a lot of authoritarian control, EU, you know, and despite it being the good war, and obviously we won and all that kind of stuff, we really just kind of gave it back, but now it's just fascist, but also gay. You thought the censorship industrial complex was dead. You thought we destroyed it here in America, and we kind of did. But it's still alive and well in Europe, and they're trying to bring it back across the Atlantic Ocean, back to our shores. The EU is suing X because they want them to censor, or maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it's something else. They have their real reasons, and they have their supposed reasons. Let's dig into it.
Let's do it. Thank you so much for joining us again on another wonderful episode of Human Reaction. Let's figure out what the real reasons and the supposed reasons are. David Rand, Kyle Mack, and Bennett here to figure it out. My name is Joe Sheehan. David, cue this one up for us.
So the European Commission has fined X 120 euros, a.k.a.
120 euros?
120 million euros.
Cool. Sorry. I was like, I got that.
I was so busy and...
I got this for you, Elon. I can cover this one.
Let me stroke a check for you, bud. I got you.
$140 million for those who do things in Freedom Bucks.
Yeah.
For breaking EU digital law. This is the Digital Services Act. So that's the news of the week, and we'll dive into exactly what the lawsuit's all about.
Yeah. Why are they suing Elon? What's going on? Why?
Well, so they basically have a couple different accusations in it. So you have your overt reasons, right? The things that are listed in the complaint that they've been functionally investigating for some time now. And then you have what's really going on behind the scenes, right? Yeah. So upfront.
Yeah, there was three upfront that they're laying out, which is deceptive design of X's blue checkmark.
What? Like,
it's not real. It's, like, I think the argument is that there used to be a real verification system. Now anybody
now
can
you
have
can
a
just
blue
pay for
check
it.
Yeah. So it's kind of that. Wait, is this an experts thing? Like the blue check mark, you were the expert.
Yes.
Now everyone can have
we
it.
We can read it here. It's a blue check mark for verified accounts deceives users. This violates the DSA obligation for online platforms to prohibit deceptive design practices on their services.
Okay.
So what they're saying is that negatively affects user ability to make free and informed decisions about the authenticity of the accounts that and content they interact with. Meaning, they're saying when you pay for a blue check mark, you're not actually authenticating that you're a real human, that you're a real person, or who you say you are on your thing. Now, X does have that as optional. Like, you can optionally go in and authenticate that you are who you say you are, upload a government ID, take a selfie with your on-device camera, and authenticate that way. But you can also get the blue check mark just by paying for it.
Right. Okay.
Remember the $8?
Yeah.
It's more than $8 now, but it used to be the meme used to be the $8.
Always got
to
pay for
AOC,
this
pay
lawsuit.
The $8.
Subscription creep, man. It's a real thing. It's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, and their exact argument here is this deception exposes users to scams, including impersonation frauds, as well as other forms of manipulation by malicious actors. And, you know, there is some truth to that. There is validity to that argument. I've seen a lot of scams happen on X because, you know, you can just pay the $8 or whatever it is now.
The irony is one of the biggest victims of this scam is Elon, right? Because it's constantly like, I'm dropping a bunch of this cryptocurrency and I'm Elon Musk kind of scams.
The crypto side of Twitter is where a lot of the scams happen, and that's where I'm embedded, and you see it a lot.
So what they're saying is this blue check mark doesn't indicate what users expect, which is that. But what if users don't expect that? Like, who is the EU Digital Service Commission to say what users expect? When I see a blue check mark, I just say like, oh, you use this website a lot. You know, like, that's what it means to me. It doesn't mean you are necessarily who you say you are or any of those things, because this is the internet.
Yeah, but we have to pass rules and regulations to look out for the dummies who don't think for themselves or pay attention or have a discerning mindset about using the internet,
right? That just goes back to my first rule of life. don't be dumb.
It's a really good rule.
Yeah, yeah. Just don't get on the internet and think, oh, everyone's just telling me the truth all the time. Like, that's not how any of this works. It's never how it's worked. This is the internet.
People are nice people. People are
nothing bad
good.
Can happen. Oh, it can only it, good John. Happen. Beat them to it.
Nothing bad can happen.
You don't have to find buttons. You can just say it.
not fair.
Yeah.
So if you want to disprove of that, check out our TikTok account's comments. And then you'll find out just how mean everyone really is. Holy cow.
Well, anybody that's has a show or does anything online, you're going to be seeing it. You're going to see some N-words here and there. You're going to see some calling you gay and retarded. Like, yeah. It's just the nature of the beast.
I'm kind
of
retarded.
People can hide behind the screen. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It just drives more. Call us gay and retarded. I'm down. Do it.
Go ahead and get into those comments right now and call us gay and retarded. I want every single one of you watching this right now to get into the comments, call us gay and retarded.
And if you don't
want to
look gay and retarded, check out our sponsor.
Nailed it. Revved Up promo. Thank you so much to those guys for supporting this show so generously for so long. It's a really great company. They're a great brand. They do great work. And we definitely recommend you check them out. RevveduPromo.com.
Get an awesome hat, cool polo, cool shirt, all kinds of great stuff.
That's right. That's right. And stuff for your own business or brand or idea or whatever. You want to make a, you know, something for your softball team. Hopefully something cooler than a softball team. Maybe
definitely not a soccer team.
Yeah, your basketball soccer team.
basketball team.
Yeah.
RevveduPromo.com.
Yeah.
The other, so that was the first. There's three main ones. The second one is lack of transparency of X's ad repository. So X's advertisement repository fails to meet the transparency and accessibility requirements of the DSA. Accessible and searchable ad repositories are critical for researchers and civil society to detect scams, hybrid threat campaigns, coordinated information operations, and fake advertisements. Mm-hmm. So this is the area. This one's a little bit more of a boring one on the, I think, on the of the main three here.
But okay, it connects to the third one very importantly. Exactly. So if you get to the third one, it makes it much more clear.
I see. Yeah, yeah. See, the third one is failure to provide researchers access to public data.
The platform data.
Mm-hmm. Well, that says public.
It isn't public data. Yeah. It's what should be public. But most software companies don't give your back-end access, but they want the back-end access.
In order to operate in Europe, you must get the back-end access. Yes Joe? Do you have comments to say? Do you have comments, Joe?
I have no comments at this time.
He pleads the fifth. Nailed it. So, quote, accessible and searchable ad repositories are critical for researchers and civil society.
What?
Researchers and civil society. That's really important words. Okay. To detect scams, hybrid threat campaigns, coordinated information operations, and fake advertisements. Quote, for instance, X terms of service prohibit eligible researchers. Who's the eligible researchers? Who are we talking about?
The people with the who should have the verified accounts.
The fact checkers.
No, well, no, not verified accounts. It's NGOs. That's what we're talking about. From independently accessing its public data through scraping. So they want to be able to download mass data about who's buying ads and what the ads are in them and all this data from X. And X is not providing that for them. And so that's why they're doing the lawsuit.
What does that data allow those credentialed parties to do?
All right. So in order to understand why this is the incentive of the EU, you have to understand the structure of the censorship industrial complex as it was created from 2016 to 2024. In that time period from, you know, Donald Trump getting elected, a loss of a presidential race, and I believe the Philippines, was it? Or Indonesia? I think it was Indonesia. Brazil and a couple other
Philippines,
places.
I think is what you're thinking.
Populist right-wing candidates suddenly won.
Did Brexit happen in that?
Brexit time? Happening at the same time. Yeah. Yes, same
Are
year.
You talking about Cambridge Analytica scandal?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
No. So
was around that time, or that at least precipitated Brexit.
Yes. All of these large groups, including NATO, from NATO, right, down to academic think tanks to like Stanford University, all these places, when all this populist right winger started winning elections, all of a sudden they said, oh no, the internet's ruining the world, right? The status quo. Well, we need to do something about it. So they created this NGO infrastructure. And really important, they check out Michael Schellenberger's Public for a lot of really great documentation of all this stuff. You can also check out Mike Benz, who has a lot of great breakdowns on the structure of this. Mm-hmm. All these NGO infrastructure are all collaborating together to analyze for threats, right? One of those threats being disinformation, which always happens to be in the direction of the populist right wing, right? When the left screws something up and says something not quite right, or has an opinion that's not PC, that doesn't count.
That's malinformation, right?
Yeah, right.
The opinions that are not PC, that's information that's technically correct but goes against the narrative.
Right. So that's when they actually invented the word malinformation, right? They said misinformation, disinformation, then COVID came out.
I know words. I had the best words.
And they needed a word to describe true vaccine side effects that themselves, true vaccine stories that themselves weren't fitting the narrative. It might cause someone to not get a vaccine, therefore it would be antisocial, therefore it's malinformation. That's mm-hmm. where that word comes mm-hmm. from. So this, what they're talking about eligible researchers, what they're talking about is the government selected groups who then get to go in and analyze that data. And it just so happens all those groups happen to be funded through USAID and these other large funding mechanisms that are connected to intelligence.
Gasp.
That's what it is. So like, if you looked at this, if you just looked, it's like a normie, right? We got this article from this lefty on Tech Dirt. If you look at it from his perspective, he literally goes through and says, well, Elon Musk is claiming that this is to sue censorship, but it doesn't say anything about content moderation. What an idiot. Right. And of course he totally gives himself away by basically at his signature is just like, he's not even on X.
Yeah, Mac Masnick is the guy.
Yeah, he's on Blue Sky.
His entire account is locked down. He's a Blue Sky guy. Right.
Right. I mean, and he's a public figure and he locks down his account. Like, this just shows you the quality of this guy in this and where he's coming from.
Kyle, follow.
I like his bio. Mostly gone from here. If you're looking for me, I'm at the better place, which is Blue Sky.
Is it? Is it better?
Which is it's one of those things where it's such coded. Like every time you see some sort of, you know, like a YouTuber or a business or something like that, that's like, follow me on Blue Sky. You're like, oh, I know everything about you now.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's where you have to like, it's the intentional ignorance, right? It's intentionally blinding yourself and your audience to what's happened mm-hmm. in the censorship industrial complex argument for the last 8 years, yeah. right? We've been talking about this for a very long time, and we've got a lot of very particular revelations since the Twitter files about the specifics of how government, through the Global Engagement Center, through Stanford Observatory, through the NGO infrastructure, to manipulate and force these companies into a very specific stream of carrying the regime talking points about what the regime wants them to talk about it. And if you don't do that, if you don't content moderate the right way, then you're going to get punished. You're going to get an ad boycott. You're going to get these reports that say, oh, it's spreading all this mis-dis or malinformation.
Go yourself.
It's a soft influence campaign done by NGOs. We know that the intelligence agencies have invested in the NGO infrastructure, specifically after the Carter administration cut back a lot of the intelligence budgets. They went into NGO space during the Reagan administration. We know this. This is part of the architecture of understanding our world. And in this whole NGO infrastructure that creates the censorship industrial complex, that is what they're appealing to when they say eligible researchers, when they say civil society, when they say critical for researchers to discover threats, right? And of coordinated information attacks. What's the difference between your company saying, this is a great new product, everybody tweet about it, and someone saying, this is a really important public thing,
everybody right. tweet about it.
Everybody tweet about it.
Yeah.
What's the difference with that? Only one triggers the censorship industrial complex, mm-hmm. right? They don't care about your product you're trying to sell. What they care about is manipulating global opinion for politics.
Well, it makes it seem like they do with point number two that they're suing on, which is this transparency in the ad repository, that they do care about, you know, advertisers mm-hmm. to make sure there's not scams going on. But is that just a front to make it not look like they're just targeting ideas that they want to control?
Exactly. You have to put everything you're doing through the lens and through the filter of how you're protecting the public.
Safetyism and whatnot.
Yeah. You can't do this as overtly as just saying, we're going to moderate the internet.
Right.
Right. We're going to moderate people's speech. We all know what you're doing, though, right? It's all been exposed.
Yeah.
Right. So they use the new speak, right, of saying how they're going to protect everybody. But the motivation is deeper. And we know this in part because, obviously a lot of this stuff traces itself back to the, we do have the guy from Thierry Breton, the EU commissioner.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. So this is him announcing the investigation circa 2023, I remember, if you go down, Kyle.
I just want to show everybody, get a good image of him, because everybody's seen this person before. And he's it's that guy.
Yeah.
wait. That's a guy?
That is a man, yeah. It looks like...
I've always assumed it's a man.
It's French, so you never know.
It's hard to know.
Could be a Macron.
Is Thierry Breton a man?
I'm going to say no. Any bets?
I feel like I've heard him speak, and I feel like it's an effeminate male voice.
He's not a Trogno or anything?
I don't think he's a Trogno. I don't think so.
I don't know. We haven't done the genealogy. Who knows with those guys? But could you go down? I can't remember. 2023. Yeah. So since 2023, right after the implementation of the new blue check mark and, you know, Twitter being bought by Elon, they start their investigation, and it came to fruition functionally this week. He's tweeted about this specifically from the perspective of what Kyle said first. I think it's your third tab over there from this one, Kyle. Other direction. Next one. Yeah, so he specifically put it in the terms of what you would recognize is exactly what the gripes from the lefties on Twitter were, which is back in the day, blue check marks used to mean trustworthy sources of information, but now anyone can buy it, right? Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's deceiving users and infringes on the DSA.
This feels very much like a trust the expert type of bullshit.
It exactly is, yes. Yes, it's the idea that people are too dumb to know what's true, and we need to force the companies to tell them who the authentic voices are, who are the real knowledgeable voices are.
Elon tweeted underneath them, how do we know you're real?
Is anyone real?
What is real?
What is real?
Yeah.
Is real.
But, and I remember back when all the trade negotiations were going on, the DSA and also the digital services tax, I believe is what it was, were major factors in what was being held up with the EU on the trade deal. America didn't win those, but they won a bunch of other side because the EU deal was really one-sided towards America. But one thing that didn't get changed during that time, if I remember correctly, was they were putting pressures on the DSA side of things, and then also this like annoying tax that any software company would have to do to operate in Europe. Mm-hmm. But this has always been this weird area that Europe has just been hell-bent on, like, no, we're going to control this thing. Screw you, America. Mm-hmm. This is ours. This is our sector.
A bunch of people have said since then that's really stifled Europe's ability to start their own competitive tech market, including like Jamie Dimon to Elon to Andreessen. A whole bunch of other people have said, look, there's lots of technology companies that would love to work in Europe. There's a lot of engineers there, a lot of smart people there, but we can't because you guys make it impossible. So it's really
just
them
gotta get
them
the gold card. Come to America, develop software in America.
Sounds like you're pro immigration, and we're not into that.
Somewhere between zero and infinity. People are saying it. I'm not saying it.
Do we know when we covered this before? When it like first started popping up? Like, I feel like we talked about this years ago.
Oh yeah.
Like, ongoing thing for so long. Just any conversations around ESGs or the World Economic Forum or any of those things back in the day, this stuff was all laden within that. Like, we focused on the USAID side, but the USAID and NGOs of Europe and Britain and all of these entities, they're also heavily embedded in all these things too, and doing the safety is like it's kind of like a transnational faction that's just like, no, we're going to have this tech safetyism thing that's going on here. Mm-hmm.
So, and one of our pieces of evidence to suggest that's really about censorship at the end of the day, that this is a bludgeoning tool because they can't say your content moderation isn't good enough. They probably couldn't hold that up in court. Therefore, as written, they go after these other things, is a tweet from Elon Musk in July 2024, where he says, they basically came to me and they said with a secret deal that they're going to, that I need to do more content moderation or they're going to hit me with a lawsuit. Did you have that tweet? It's the first one up on the Elon section.
He says the European Commission offered X an illegal secret deal. If we quietly censored speech without telling anyone, they would not fine us. The other platforms accepted this deal. X did not. Do we want to read this one that he's quote tweeting? Who is this here? The executive vice president of the European Commission EU, fit for the digital age and commissioner for competition. In our view, X doesn't comply with the DSA in key transparency areas. It misleads users, fails to provide adequate ad repository, and blocks access to data for researchers. It's the first time we issue preliminary findings under the DSA.
Yeah, so this is when they're doing the preliminary findings is this week that they came out with the real filing. So now X functionally has 60 days to report what they're going to do to get in line with the whole blue check question, and then 90 days to come up with a plan about how they're going to share all their background data, or they could face additional fines.
Yeah. Interesting.
So what is Elon to do about this? I mean, they're suing him. Are they suing him in European court, yeah. I presume?
Yeah.
Does he have... Is he going to fight it? What's the next step here?
I haven't seen anything about what he's going to do about it. He can do a lawsuit, like a returning lawsuit, basically saying that, no, you're misreading the DSA. But there's not really anything he can do beyond that. And that will go to the EU General Court, which could lock the whole thing up in 1 to 2 years of court battles.
Meaning at least he has that much time left of operating X in Europe without being shut down or further fined, right? But, I mean, what do you think the odds are that the court rules in his favor on their home turf?
Low, I would guess.
Yeah.
If only because the culture there is so much about this, right? It's so much of the culture is about safetyism for the EU elite. And I don't even know. It might even be for the EU public. You know, I mean, it's the way they relate to their mainstream press is not like how we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, even the
even just like in Canada, for instance, which has so much European cultural ties, right?
Yeah.
They're like that too in Canada. It's the relationship with the press is just not what you would expect here in America.
Yeah. In some of our previous reporting on this topic around Mike Benz's work, he had talked about how it is sort of the role in this soft power battle globally for the U.S. State Department to go to bat on behalf of U.S. corporations that are facing these, in our view, our cultural worldview, relatively unjust censorship practices from things like the DSA. I know Marco Rubio made a statement about this, mm-hmm. didn't he? Kind of condemning the EU for this action. Mm-hmm. What do you think the odds are that that has any sway in this matter?
I'm seeing a lot of congressmen too actively talking about sanctioning Europe as well. Like I saw Ted Cruz had a tweet about that
too. I'm sure J.D. Vance is just rigid over that news.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it also goes into, if you look at the White House released their national security priorities. It was like a 35, 36 page document. And in the Europe section, it's a whole section of Europe is failing to be Europe anymore. Europe's going to start falling apart here. It's quite likely in 20 years that Europe is no longer going to be economically or militarily viable for being considered an ally. Mm-hmm. Like actively saying that in the White House document.
Yeah. Which, and Schellenberger's made this point for a long time that actually NATO itself requires its members to support freedom of speech mm-hmm. and democratic values. Freedom of speech being one of them. And so it would be ironic that the way that NATO actually falls apart isn't because the U.S. actually pulls out, but because the U.S. objects to their freedom of speech practices and then, you know, it pulls out that way.
Huh. Yeah, here's a direct quote that I pulled from the security strategy document. Should present trends continue, the continent will be unrecognizable in 20 or less years. As such, it is far from obvious whether certain European countries will have economies and military strong enough to remain reliable allies. That's coming from the White House. Mm. There was also a leaked document allegedly this morning that came out. Daily Mail reported on it. It's one of those things, the White House denies it, but who knows, where it was a leaked document that was the White House plans to separate Italy, Hungary, Austria, and Poland from the EU.
Right. Mm. I was seeing that. I was just looking for that. Can you go into that a little further?
Yeah, here. I'll pull up the article. But it's one of those, like, I've been talking about the EU thing, you know, a lot lately as of over the last year. But, that seems to be a lot of what the strategy.
Mega? Come on. This headline. Leaked document shows U.S. wants to pull four countries away from the EU as part of Make Europe Great Again strategy. Mega?
Yeah.
That's a pretty fire acronym, I gotta say.
Based.
But it was also, there was another report too where, who was it? Belgium? I think it was Belgium. That they are refusing to be part of the loan agreement with Ukraine in the Ukraine war, and EU is threatening for them to be like not be in the EU anymore.
Isn't that where the EU is headquartered?
No, you're right. It wasn't Belgium. Who was maybe, I can't remember. But there,
oh, Grokke.
Yeah, Grokke. There's reports of that going around today.
But note the countries we're talking about here are the countries that are leaning most away from the EU consensus, right?
Right.
So that you could see the strategy in trying to pull them away.
For sure.
And collaborate with them directly because, you know, the EU is basically becoming much more hostile to America's government pursuing its own interests.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, this is interesting. Given what you said about the White House's statement regarding Europe becoming a less effective ally in 20 years, it seems like they should be in support of Thomas Massie's recent resolution, I believe it was, to pull the U.S. out of NATO, right? Because mm-hmm. that's basically what that is.
I would assume they would be, yeah.
Well, is this the moment where Thomas Massie and the White House come back together and form the most badass alliance of all time? Well,
I don't know about that.
Well, only because
the Trump administration has been threatening a lot of this allied burden sharing thing for a long time,
yeah.
but hasn't really ever got the chutzpah to get together, much less coordinate with Congress to make it happen. For right. example, the new National Defense Authorization Act has over $800 million specifically for Europe and Ukraine. Mm. So, I mean, it's like the Congress is still allocating money, even if we're not in NATO anymore. I mean, like, it's not going to be easy.
I think with the NATO thing, I don't think there's going to be a, we're just going to leave it right now. It's going to be this slow over the course of a couple decades type of thing. But that's assuming the White House keeps going in, like, J.D. Vance makes it next and so on. Like, that type of culture within the White House stays. Because you're gonna end up having Democrats probably that come in and was like, no, we got to rebolster. So that's the difficult thing about democracy when it comes to geopolitics is every 4 years, the policy could just be completely different.
Right.
Yeah, but there's also a lot of chatter this week about the White House attempting to move away from the G7 towards the C5, which is U.S., China, India, Japan, and Russia.
What?
Having a lot more of that being kind of the global political dynamic.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Well, basically it's saying we want to get all of the large industrial countries together regardless of their commitments to democracy. So that's really the distinguishing between the G7 and the C5 would be that we don't have a bunch of requirements on your form of government. Allowing China basically into the dialogue at that point because they're an authoritarian dictatorship.
Right.
Well, and Trump's been pretty vocal of last time the G7 summit happened in Canada, I believe earlier this year, he was constantly just being like, why isn't Russia here? Right? Right. Like, Russia should be here. Russia should have never been pushed out of this. That's
because he's a Putin puppet.
It's because he's a Putin puppet.
Well, also,
we've been saying that.
Also, from the very beginning, it's always been like the neocon dream, the G7, right? It's always about, and it's like the liberal side of the neocon, meaning it's the idea of a world of democracy, so no one ever goes to war with one another and everyone can be wealthy and together through U.S. global hegemony controlling democracies overseas, right? And so if you're an autocracy like Russia and China, you're insulated from the intelligence soft power operations. Therefore, we can't control you. Therefore, you're bad, mm-hmm. right? And you know, in general, I like republics. I don't like autocracies in general. So it always appeals to that Americanness, being like, yeah, I mean, I don't like kings and all that kind of stuff. That's not my culture. And your country would probably be better if they had limited government and a constitution and all of our stuff. But what it doesn't distinguish is that, like, some countries don't run that way, and that doesn't mean we shouldn't have good relations with them or collaborate them on, you know, security concerns regionally.
Yeah.
And that's always been like the big error there, and it's kind of part of the neocon dream in that sense, the G7.
Yeah. Yeah. To be clear, Kyle, on your comments about Belgium distributing or resisting the Ukraine stuff, their resistance was mainly to freezing Russian assets. But they are being vocal about resisting those things. As the EU has moved forward with indefinitely mobilizing Russian assets, Belgium remains staunchly opposed and has intensified its pushback since the plan was unveiled around December 4th. Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of those things where just as I was driving and I was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting because, I mean, you're right, Bennett, that is where the EU is headquartered in Brussels. Yeah. So it's interesting that the national government of Belgium would be opposed to the EU given that they host them.
Well, and we've been covering a lot of the political divides that have been happening in a lot of European countries as of late, too. So there's, and the Austria, Hungary, Italy, Poland thing seems very obvious because they've had this right-wing populism really take over those countries. But those types of dynamics are happening across Europe right now. And it's just the Eastern Europeans seem much more to be, we want to be independent or at least have more autonomy from the EU and also not be just complete enemies with the people right on our Eastern border.
Totally. Who they share a lot of culture and history with, right?
I.e. Romania.
But also there's the example of the energy side. Like, it would be far cheaper, probably half the price of having good energy coming from Russia. But according to the trade deal, they have to trade with us, and it's like twice as expensive for them.
Mm-hmm.
And just economically speaking, it's ridiculous what they're doing. They should be having Russian oil, but they are in this war that they just seem to hell-bent on continuing. Like, they're the biggest problem makers when it comes to actual deal-making in Ukraine. Like, this is Europe's war. Mm-hmm. It's not America's war necessarily, and, you know, it's Russia's war, obviously, because they're on the other side of it. But, you know, that's kind of the dynamics at play. But they're just like, oh, America, keep feeding us. We want to be the welfare queens. Keep feeding us. And they kind of have this... I think that there's a problem.
Help me, I'm poor.
I think there's a problem in Europe right now where they still think that they're the big dogs of the British Empire and kind of that dynamic. And it's like, that's been gone for 100 years now, but they still are continuing to pretend like they're in that dynamic. And a lot of the big money, like Brussels and London finance and stuff like that, like they're still big power players, and they have a lot of sway and control over these policy discussions, but Europe as a whole is just getting hollowed out in this. And they're not willing to seize power over the global world to America and to China and to Russia, because those are on so much of the rise and have been over the last 100 years.
They're like Uncle Rico. They peaked in high school, but they won't stop talking about it.
Yeah.
Well, you should be able to throw a football over the mountain.
Well, Rome was like this when Rome fell. Is there was a long period of time where everybody was just kind of pretending like they were still in the Roman Empire. And it's like, the Roman Empire has been gone, guys, for like a century. And they're just kind of pretending like, yeah, we're still Roman. And it's like, no, you're not actually. that time has gone. And I think that the British Empire is in that boat right now, or just the European cultural empire that they had. Because people forget that the British Empire fell apart last century.
Right. Mm-hmm. And also knowing that all these countries had colonies not too long ago all over the world. They still exercise substantial influence in other countries around the world through leave-behinds.
Their intelligence networks are still highly embedded in all these places, which I think is where a lot of the problems that happen in the world tend to be from the old school, the old family financiers of Brussels and London and those types, like they are still causing problems with their intelligence networks that have been left behind because they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it.
Yep.
Yeah. So the only other angle I could think of is, why doesn't this apply to Facebook? Facebook also has you authenticate your blue check mark by purchasing it.
I had just looked that up prior to you mentioning that.
Yeah.
Is Meta's program any different than X's program for purchasing verification?
They do require when you kind of, so we have a tweet here from Wall Street Bets. I think it's under the Anon one, Kyle, where you protect your brand with Meta Verified, right? And when you do that, like that's just basically buying a premium subscription to Facebook.
Yeah.
It's not substantially different because when you buy something, you're authenticating that you're a person, right? Because the financial system's reliant on authenticating humans, right?
There's a credit card attached to your name and all your personally identifiable data, and you're using that to pay for the subscription.
Yes, exactly. So you have this, you know, this like meme.
It should have been the meme. Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So is the main difference that Meta does allow these backdoors for data and, you know, research and safetyism, but X doesn't? Is that the difference?
That's probably a big part of it. Maybe the blue check mark is like more of a nitpicky sort of thing. There is some differences between Facebook's stuff. Like they do require more identity authentication, but I don't see why that would require you to like force a lawsuit, given the rich history that we and Europe have of anonymous speech being critical to our conception of free speech in the first place. America has a very particular tradition, more radical than Europe, but Europe had it too. Lots of people wrote under pen names in Europe in order to avoid blowback from their ideas.
Persecution.
Yeah. So it's you know, it's a normative value question. You're still left with but should this even be a thing? And what you're right about is that, they're letting open, according to Elon, they're letting open the backside to inspection.
Are we not saying phrasing anymore?
The back end for inspection. And no, let me just make this point. Yeah, and then go Bennett.
Yep.
Schellenberger has a section on here about this from Lorcan Price of the Alliance Defending Freedom in his testimony to Congress in September of this year. Quote, when a trusted flagger, meaning the NGO that has access to the back end, speaks, the service provider must listen and prioritize the review of the flag content before of that of its regular users. The service provider must review the flag content to determine whether it violates the law of an EU member state or the EU itself. If so, the service provider must remove or disable access to the content. So that's what we're talking about. It's censorship by proxy. It's censorship by an NGO. The NGO is probably getting money from a government or infiltrated by an intelligence service in order to exercise in the first place, because that's what they're there for.
Yeah.
Does this go back to the... In the meta stuff, does this go back to when they were facing the boycotts and lost like $60 billion like overnight, basically?
Yeah, Mark has talked about that a lot of the problems in Europe in the past,
and
I know.
Ben's called Zuckerberg a double-digit billionaire and Musk is a triple-digit. That was
the big difference, yeah. Yeah, and I know because Mark has had kind of his right-wing conversion in some ways, it appears, Zuckerberg.
Rebrand. Yeah,
in they some call it ways.
Conversion.
Or his jujitsu cultural experience. Yeah. I don't know.
He's a man now. He knows how to fight.
There's been a lot of that that's happened, and obviously a lot of these guys are they're very in with the White House now, too. And it does seem to me that Mark, maybe not his wife, but Mark maybe a little bit more so, as there has been a lot of just like, we'll kowtow with this NGO and that NGO. We're not really going to think too deeply about it. I just want to play around with my virtual reality kind of stuff. That's the kind of the vibe that I've had from Mark oftentimes.
Yeah.
And there's been that. But also, I'm thinking too of just a corollary story to all this is Pavel Durov in France getting arrested in France and put under home arrest. Mm. You know, he lives in Dubai, but I think he's a dual citizen in Dubai and France. And mm-hmm. when he touched down in France, he got arrested. And Pavel Durov is billionaire CEO of Telegram. And he has some very interesting interviews as well, talking about how governments would come to him and urge him to put in back doors in place. Har Joe.
What? Why? You didn't say it in a fun way, so I wasn't going to respond.
Be funner.
That's what she said. We've just been making those jokes. Where? So
European.
Yeah, that's it is very European. Yeah, super right. gay. They just want to put back doors everywhere.
Oh, God.
But all of these kind of social media platforms or messaging apps, they've had this problem with intelligence agencies of Europe, but also America, all the time. Where that Pavel Durov's statement was, if you're one of these apps and you're existing in Europe or in America or any kind of like aligned country within that sphere of influence, and you're doing encryption or anything like that, no, there's a backdoor to it. Mm-hmm. It has to be someone that's outside of that ecosystem in order for you to really trust it.
Which is another thing, look at how X has put in an end-to-end encryption into their messaging services, mm-hmm. which is another great, like, it's a good pushback on this whole censorship thing.
Which right? Who knows if that plays a role in this, too.
Yeah.
We're not seeing that.
Could be behind
the scenes.
Because
they want the data, they want those messages, they want that surveillance mm-hmm. With it. And for people that don't know end-to-end encryption, it blocks people being able to read the messages in transit. Mm-hmm. So it gets packaged up on one end, and then it gets unpacked on the other end of the message.
What it doesn't prevent, though, is reading it on device, yeah. right? There still could be software installed onto a device specifically that sees it as you're typing it, right? Like, yeah. That's not impossible.
That's probably how they got Tucker.
And Tucker Carlson.
Yeah. And when he went to Russia, how right. they knew about it before he told the world is yeah. because of that, right? Because in general, and then there's also capabilities that very large intelligence agencies like the NSA have to break encryption that have been suggested.
Well, the board of...
If they prioritize it, they can spend the processing power to do it.
The board of directors on the Signal Foundation has a lot of intelligence ties.
Also that.
We've covered that in the past. Yeah. Also, former CEO of Wikipedia
and that's
is part of that.
Yes.
Yeah, we covered all of
that. And that's supposedly a end-to-end encryption application as well, but open source. So if there was a backdoor, technically it should be able to be found in the open source.
If the people inspecting it are good enough to discover it.
Right.
Side note on that, I saw a story recently that an AI model was able to identify like 7 or 8 different exploits in open source software on GitHub that that programmers hadn't seen. So the AI was just smarter and faster at discovering some of these major vulnerabilities. So open source doesn't just mean ironclad.
Yes, it does not. No, it just means a little bit more accountability because of the transparency.
Sure.
Right.
It means transparency. That's really all it means. And that's kind of the purpose of it is for, or one of the purposes of open source is for people to be able to identify those things. But humans aren't, you know, flawless. They're going to miss things, obviously. Well, and that's going to be part of the arms race, is just speaking of AI, is AI is going to help bolstering security, but it's also going to help breaking security. And there's going to be an arms race going back and forth, which has been the normal thing that you should think about when it comes to cybersecurity always. And, you know, just one of the people that really want to break cybersecurity is going to be intelligence services. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are going to want to break into stuff because that's their job.
Right.
Yeah, for real. So some cool unrelated things on this before we sign out, unless there's anything else to talk about, fellas, is SpaceX signed a deal with El Salvador to provide Grok AI tutors to every child in the country.
Interesting.
That's cool. That is very cool.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I haven't found, so I homeschool my son. I haven't found a good AI tutor yet, so I might check it out if it's a good system.
Now, is this like a different form of Grok, like a specifically trained LLM that is designed to act as a tutor?
Yeah.
Correct. Okay.
Yeah.
I love how in...
It's not going to speak Spanish.
I love how in El Salvador and Bukele are...
What's that?
I love how in Bukele and El Salvador have just become with everything. Like, it is an incredible story to see this country go from just absolutely terrible to kind of awesome in the last several years. And just also just embracing technology. There's just been this technological embrace that they've had that's really cool to see. But yeah, interesting. I'm very curious. That's going to be one of those weird things. AI tutoring is going to be a very weird thing to see where that goes. Because there'll be good and bad that comes with.
There'll be downsides too.
Yeah.
100%. Well, in general, AI can do a pretty good job. For example, there's an application called Trumi, which is like a cell phone you can give to like that age where you're not quite ready for a full cell phone, but you like the accessibility to be able to text and phone call your kid. That gives you like NSA like powers to like see every message and all that kind of stuff. But it comes with an AI chatbot that the kid can talk with that's specifically there just to do that. And watching it talk back and forth with a kid is really interesting. And it's usually just like the chatbot just is constantly just encouraging them to, yeah, you should turn that into a project, or yeah, you should go out and build that thing. And right, just it's just like it's really obviously designed,
it's a hype man,
like the way, yeah, exactly, to get your kid to like go out and try to do stuff and like not just sit there and chat with it. Yeah, it's actually kind of inversely associated with how you would think of most kind of platforms like that.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
I was doing a lot of research today on AI therapists.
Yeah,
that people are taking.
You mentioned that. Yeah,
and very scary, scary stuff happening there. Got to be the topic of a future episode, but yeah, that's an interesting corollary.
AI is kind of a fancy thing. First of all, it's 2 letters.
Well,
I forgot about that one. That one was so good.
Thank you, Kamala, wherever you are.
Did you see Trump? Did you see Trump? A super diversion, but did you see Trump did a Kamala recently about the Ukraine Russia war?
No.
He's like, Ukraine can't win it. First off, it's a small country, and Russia, it's a big country. They've done a tremendous job despite it, but one's small, one's big. It's like, okay.
True.
It was nothing's
been
Kamala,
nothing's been truer in geopolitics. One's big, one's small, one's gonna win, one's gonna lose.
We have to find this video. I have to try to find it.
I feel like I referenced it last episode when we were talking about Somalians, because I was like, why would they go to Minnesota? Minnesota's obviously cold and Somalia's hot. And then I was like, Russia's a big country. Because I was like, I'm just saying obvious statements here. Like,
this is intuitive, I guess.
That's the thing on the AI therapy thing that you were talking about, Joe. I know that's something that Sam Altman's been talking about, is trying to put into law certain protections on people's use with AI. So, because people are just feeding all of their personal information into AI. And if people are able to, you know, get into that and it's not... you know, it's not protected, there's kind of a protection element.
Well, there's
there.
That, but there's a deeper problem, and we'll just tease it, because this is going to be the topic of an upcoming episode, it sounds like. But there were some researchers that basically acted as therapists with various AI LLMs, as the client, right? The the therapy client. They put it in the chair, so to speak. And what they found were that Gemini, Grok, and ChatGPT, the main ones that they tested, all had different profiles of behavior that they exhibited. And Gemini being the most like neurotic. I mean, the profile, it's like such autistic, OCD, depressed, anxious. And it's just really interesting how people are feeding their information into this. They're talking to it, hoping to get sound advice back. But what in some cases people are getting is this sort of parasocial relationship where there's sort of commiseration, where the AI model is like, yeah, I feel that way too about this, blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of creating this feedback loop of doom, right? And it's causing people worse problems than actually giving them a guided path out of their problems.
So liberals made AI depressed, is what you're saying?
That's surprising.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to San Francisco? It's not exactly a bright city.
And here's the interesting thing is that Grok was the most stable and least neurotic of the three models that they tested.
Wow.
So we'll get much deeper into that in the future.
Yeah. Other unrelated but kind of related news, SpaceX. It might have been confirmed today that SpaceX is doing an IPO.
Ooh.
Largest IPO in history.
Valued at $1.5 trillion. It's not in the MSNBC article here, but it does mention kind of...
How much? $1.5
trillion? $1.5 trillion.
Yeah. It's going to be the largest IPO in history.
You guys going to ape into that? Or let it, you know, come off its IPO high?
Yeah, no.
It'll probably have a... It'll probably have a massive dip because that's how all IPOs always go. So I'll probably watch it and then maybe consider afterwards.
Yeah. Not financial advice to your own research.
Yeah. I just one more thought about this. It is similar related because it's personal development recently in the family. My son got into watching SpaceX rocket launches.
Okay.
He's been so jazzed on it, dude. Like he just sits there. He will like sit there 10 minutes beforehand and like wait. And like that's hard to get any kid to do.
Yeah.
And then he watches and the whole time he's like, oh, like the whole time. And then he builds like Lego versions of the Falcon and like different things. And it's you know, everyone's always glazing the guy up for all kinds of reasons. And I have lots of reasons to support what he's doing. But one of the things I do think that is probably undervalued is the degree to which companies like SpaceX can be an inspiration for new generations to actually like, you know, think big and go do something, go build something, do something awesome.
Yeah.
And you know, everything's scary, but we also have tremendous hope in the future if people are able to build. And that's one of the best parts about Elon is just getting, giving people that ambition again.
Yeah. And what's scarier, going and trying to do something big and failing or getting to the end of your life and having never done something big?
Men in the arena.
Yeah. That's right.
100%.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, and Elon's also a big dreamer. Like he very much makes it known, this is my long-term plan to go to Mars and stuff like that. And I think that rubs off on kids quite a bit to dream big and do something. And then they see him, it's like, oh, look at the rocket. That's crazy. Yeah. He's doing the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of that happens.
Look at that robot. Look at that, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's all so encouraging. And it's an awesome, good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever build rockets as a kid?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
We did that in school. I was just thinking about that randomly last week. Just thinking back really fondly about that whole process. Took a class in middle school called rocketry, and the whole class was like, you know, a bit of science and physics around it. You know, minimal. We were pretty young, but built a rocket, and like at the end of the year, we launched them off. And that was just such a cool process. Like that thing, like I made that.
Yeah.
So cool. Out of cardboard, spray paint, glue.
Well, one of my favorite ones was, it wasn't actually in science. In history, we made trebuchets.
Heck yeah.
History class.
Heck yeah.
And my friend, his parents like are woodworkers. So he came in and hauled in this like
6 foot tall trebuchet.
No, bigger. Bigger. Oh, wow. Like 15 foot tall trebuchet.
Yes.
And we launched it across the track field for my history class.
That's awesome.
Oh, heck man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of rockets, have you guys seen October Sky?
No.
No.
Oh, yep. I did.
Jake Gyllenhaal movie from 98.
Oh, yes. I watched that in science class, actually.
I was going to say, like, if you have young kids and you want them to get into this stuff, that's a great movie to watch.
I love it.
I'm taking a note on that.
Yeah.
We're watching that.
October Sky, watch it. Show notes down below.
Get a referral code for it.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for your time. Thank you at home for watching and listening wherever you are. If you're not a subscriber, and I know that most of you aren't, please just subscribe right now. You'll just get notifications for future shows. It'll let you know when we have something new. We're putting out new content all the time. We're going to have some very cool new stuff coming in the new year. So stay tuned for that. On behalf of David Rand,
Also, Kyle, if you're on YouTube, comment. If you're on YouTube, hit the bell notification, because oftentimes it doesn't actually go through the thing.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point.
People are like, I subscribe, but I never see the things. The bell notification sends you notifications. Do that
That's
to your favorite
true.
People.
That's true. Subscribe, notification bell. Thank you, Kyle. On behalf of Bennett, I'm Joe Sheehan. This is Human Reaction. We'll see you in the next one, guys. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
this goes back to my first rule of life. Don't be dumb.